Yes, this is Jamala Rogers, your host of Voices from the Battlefield, and I'm telling you, my music will just not cooperate when I am not in the studio, but I'm gonna master it one day, one day, one day, one day. This is one of those times when I am going to be have an open mic, and there goes my mama in front of the camera. Because I am not in St. Louis. There she is. What can I say? So I am here because I am taking care of her. And this is something I want you all to think about because I'm here because she was afflicted with the parasite. And so I am here to give a helping hand to her. So if you haven't heard about the parasite, mainly because we have a dysfunctional CDC who's supposed to be our watchdog for health and all that good stuff, is that there is a parasite infection, virus, germ, whatever, going through this country like wildfire. And it's connected to first fresh fruits and vegetables, mainly it seems like lettuce. So please wash those items very well. Sometimes somebody has told me you put a little vinegar in the water when you are washing it. Make sure if it's fruit, you can take a little brush and wash it off. But we do want to get those parasites off because they are nothing to be played with. My mom, just because of her age, had to be hospitalized. So it's no plaything. It robs you of your bodily fluids, and she got dehydrated and had to be hospitalized. So keep your ears and eyes open for that, and be vigilant. Do not eat those fruits, particularly grapes, when you're in the store. They might have some of those parasites on them. So this is a time that I remind you that we still have a 34 count president. I hate to even call him president. He's not a president. He is a wannabe dictator and doing a good job of wrecking not just our national economy, but the world economy. He is a pathological liar. He is a twice impeached president. So why is he still in place? That's the question I think we have to keep asking ourselves. And I know last week, or maybe it was the week before, I got a little heat about constantly reminding you all about who he is. And I do that for a reason, because I think it's so easy for us to normalize his behavior. And it's not normal behavior. That's just not me talking. Even before he did the second term, there was over 150 psychologists and psychiatrists that gave a diagnosis for him. He is unfit for office, particularly this office, the highest office in the land. And so I think it's my responsibility to remind you of that. And so, yeah. And how did we get here, you all? I think we need to think about that, particularly as we quote, celebrate the 250th anniversary of the United States. Some people have reminded me that black people in particular, that when July 4th came, they didn't feel like it was a whole lot to celebrate. And I think that's true. We have been through a lot under this particular regime, but we as people of African descent have been through a lot for the past 500 plus years. So people weren't really feeling it come July 4th. And what I've been saying is, let's use this particular benchmark to determine how we want to move forward. And I guess it's been about a year ago that I wrote a piece called How Does It Feel to Be a Problem? Because that's what we've been in this country since slavery was so-called abolished, because there was this surplus of labor that was going to be problematic, not just in terms of the economy, but also in terms of the social and political stability in this country because of how we came to this country as captives, as chattel property. We were like an add-on in the Constitution, so we really have not seriously enjoyed the citizenship that was supposed to be for us under the 14th Amendment. So, given that we've been here longer than anybody except the indigenous people, and we've been in, how should I say, we've been in relationship with our colonial oppressors for a long time, what does it look like going forward? And I think we really want to think about that. I think just based on the way this stuff is tumbling down in different ways, that we could build something new. And I think we just have to, and this is just not for people of African descent, but any justice loving person, any democracy defender needs to be thinking about once we get out of this madness and how we get out of it is solely up to us, then what do we want to build? What would it look like? And right now, I know it's hard to think about that, but I think those of us, even those of us who don't consider ourselves visionaries, will think about this a little bit more than others, because I think we have come to a place where we have to say this is not working for us. It's not working for probably most people, but definitely people. The darker you get, it seems like the less able that it's working for us. But I really want us to think about in the next few months leading up into the midterm elections, what do we want? What do we want our families to have? What do we want our neighborhoods to look like? What do we want? How do we want this country to function? And I think that because we had a role in getting us here, we have to have responsibility for getting this out. And when I say getting us here, I really am talking about is, you know, Trump is a symptom of a disease. And the disease has been complacency and normalization of undemocratic and inhumane behaviors and practices. And I think when we look at it, all of us in this country had a role to play in that, some more than others. So I'm not saying it's equal blame, not at all. But when we give our power up and expect those who have been zapping our power, taking our power, extracting our power to be fair and just, then we have to say, Jamala, that was naivety on your part, or that was giving up unnecessary power on your part. And I think when we think about it, all of us will have something to say about that, and we should. If we are going to go forward in a radical manner, we have to all take responsibilities. Now, I'm putting those 175 million people who voted for Trump the second time, I'm putting them in a separate category because they got a lot of atonement, a lot. And some of them have broken away, true, and some of them have been more active in trying to correct their wrongs. But it's really going to take more than that because by the time he came, well, most of us knew the first term that he was going to be trouble. But by the second term, the second administration, we knew he was going to be double trouble, and he's been more than that. He's every day it seems like that his goal is to destroy something, some institution, some law, some practice, something. So it's been destruction for the past umpteen months. So yeah, I really want us to think about what our role has been and what we want it to be going forward, because you want to be on the history books of playing a role in redemocratizing this country. I mean, it was an experiment from the beginning. We still had not achieved all the democratic goals, all the things that the Constitution afforded us. We still were working on that. And this particular administration, because they were insisting on making America white again and making America male again, and nationalist Christian again, then that meant that we were going back in time. And so we see that now, even with the voting rights under attack again, that yeah. And then citizenship under attack, and we seem to think that's only for those people who were not born in this country. That is not the case, y'all. These folks are trying to get rid of anybody other than white males being born in this country are going to be subject to second-class citizenship or no citizenship. So, I think it's a lot to think about right now. On top of us struggling economically, every time we go to the grocery store, we feel it. Every time we go to the gas pump, we feel it. But we ought to have outrage for sure. And for me, I use outrage and rage in general to fuel my actions. So I'm not a quiet sufferer. When things happen to me, I'm going to let you know I don't like it, and then I'm going to show you I don't like it. And so I do that by organizing, 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 as Sekou Touré would tell us to do. So there are a few things. This is an open mic. I wish I had the capabilities of seeing some of you all's comments. Sometimes I don't get to see them till after the show, because I'm trying to multitask with all these buttons and things. But there were some things that came up from the last show on immigration when we had Kika Matos here. I got a chance to ask one of the questions, and that is, what had happened to all of these adolescents and teenage girls who were going into these concentration camps who were turning up pregnant? And we know who they've been impregnated by. They've been impregnated by the guards and other folks associated with these camps. These girls are being shipped to a separate facility in Texas. And so Kika did confirm that that's true. So another question that came in that I didn't get a chance to ask her, I had to ask her afterwards, and that is, remember under the first Trump administration, they had the same concentration camps where families were being separated and put in these literally cages. And some of you asked, were those families ever united? And Kika's answer is no. Those folks disappeared, including the children. So, wow, y'all. This is like being in Guatemala somewhere where people disappear, you never know what happened to them. This is supposed to be a civilized country, but we see more and more every day we are looking like some of these countries that are under horrible regimes, barbaric regimes, and that people are not given due process is supposed to be the case under the Constitution. And so when you have that kind of regime going on, I think it's even more important for us to keep our eyes on what's going on, because eventually it's going to come to our door. And that part of it, we really do have to acknowledge that eventually the taking of one group of people's rights will expand and include other groups. So I know there's been some discussion about, okay, how do we continue to support people who are being rounded up, who in some ways, in some cases, we were told that they were going to round up the most dangerous, and we see that the most dangerous people seem to be workers who are contributing to this economy. That is the sick part about this. So, the father that was shot in front of his daughter a couple of weeks ago, that's who they're after. The father of three grown sons in Texas who had his own business for working for 30 years in this country, getting pulled out of his car and shot in front of his brother and co-workers. That's the most dangerous people in the world. These folks have been our neighbors. Many times we don't even know that they have been, that they are immigrants or they under some special status. And I say that because our history in this country is has plenty of examples of how quickly regimes had us look at each other as the other, and we stood aside and let atrocities happen. And so we don't want to repeat those. We've had it with different racial groups, including black folks, and we just don't need that to happen again, not in 2026. So I'm thinking about, for example, when Chinese laborers were brought to this country in the 1800s to build the railroad, in California, and it was to unite the railroad system out of the West with the one coming from the East. And so mainly those were Chinese workers that they had imported. Now, they weren't necessarily slaves, but they were brought here and paid very little. They got hardly no credit for the work that they had done. In fact, the photograph that shows the historic meeting of the rails between the East and the West had all white men, not a one person of Asian descent. So they were completely erased from that history. But all that work that they put in, guess what happened in 1882 when the railroad was built? They had been there a while. Now their families wanted to come over to be with their mates, and they're like, we're not gonna have all these Chinese people in here, so we're gonna pass the Chinese Exclusion Act of 1882. So after that, like, probably that was the first anti-immigration piece of legislation that I can think of. It's like, nah, we don't want any more Chinese here. We don't want any more slant eyes here. No. And so cut the door off of folks, Chinese people trying to reconnect with their families. And so that was, a tragedy for those families, pretty traumatic. But this is the history of this country, to use people and kick them to the curb, and then demonize them and do all other kind of things, so they never get to be true citizens, even if it's on paper. And so that's exactly what happened with the Chinese, and we certainly can look at what happened to folks of whose ancestors were descendants of slaves, like what happened to us. But I think going forward, we need to recognize what ICE is. And the calls to defund them are real and true, and I think we need to honor that and support that, because here is a agency, and it's hard to even acknowledge or confirm how much money they have in the budget, but they have one of the biggest budgets in the defense than any other agency. So it's tens of billions of dollars. And now they're asking for more. These folks have so much money, they don't know what to do with it. So quite naturally, they can do some of the things that we say, and that's go all over the country, pretending to safeguard democracy by picking up innocent people and shooting them in front of their children. So they need to be defunded. There's really no need for ICE, and I'm not saying there's not any need for some kind of protection of borders from, quote, hostile forces. But the hostility really comes from this country. If we weren't all over the world causing, creating conflict and tensions and murder and mayhem, we wouldn't have to worry about our borders, And I think that, the more that we see how ICE functions, we know that they are not trained. These folks don't know the difference between a Venezuelan and a Cuban. They don't know the difference between Ethiopians and Haitians. They do anything that looks different and has an accent. And sometimes you don't even have to have an accent. They're swooping you up. And so when they swoop you up, I look at it not unlike what they do with the criminal justice system here. If you get caught up and wrongful convictions. It's hard as hell to get out. I don't care what your evidence is. Why? Because by you being victorious in that fight, that means there's something wrong with the system. And that's one thing they hate to admit, that the system is flawed. And of course, we know it's flawed by design. But if you have people who say they are innocent and you can prove it by DNA and any other ways that we prove wrongful conviction, then that's a chink out of the armor of this system that has been created and fortified to keep us in check. And it's no different from ICE. Like, if they wrongfully pick somebody up in a sweep, it's hard to say, oh, we got three family folks here that wasn't supposed to be here. Because that means the system is flawed. That means the system is messed up. And they don't want to do that. And the people who have gotten out of those concentration camps or out of custody in some way, it's really been because some legislator who that person was in their district raised hell along with the family and the community. But if you didn't have that, you probably are still somewhere languishing, trying to get a hold to loved ones. And so, what do we really want a system like that? Hell no, we don't. And so we have to work to make sure that is a humane and civil system for whoever has to go through it. And that might mean that, people who are here for the wrong reasons, still have, due process. They do. That's under the Constitution. They have due process. You just don't take people and decide, I'm gonna do my judge, jury, and executioner right here. Although we know our history is replete with that when we look at the way that lynchings occur and continue to occur in this country, because somebody decided that they wanted to be judge, jury, and executioner. But I think that one of the things that has fascinated me about authoritarianism and fascism, and I've done a lot of looking at Hitler, because the thing that fascinated me most about Hitler is how he was able to get a whole country, and I should say countries, to believe in his beliefs, that somehow everybody other than white Aryan folks deserve to be on this planet. And what that looked like is that at one point in some of these countries, German mainly, but in other places too, sometimes German and Jews lived in the same neighborhoods. Sometimes they intermarried. So how is it that a man can almost overnight tell you this person is a problem? And then, like switching on a light, you say, yes, they're a problem, and I believe what you say, and whatever you want me to do to them, I will. That to me is the most fascinating things. And so I really try to study human behavior, but particularly under those conditions, what would make somebody that's been a neighbor for maybe a couple of generations, and then all of a sudden somebody tells you they're the enemy, and you say, oh yeah, I believe you. That's pretty remarkable. And I remember when Yuri Kochiyama started out her book that way, because she was Japanese descent. And she talked about when they came for the Japanese. This is another example of, racial isolation and confinement, is that during the war against the Japanese, all the Japanese people were rounded up, even those that had been born here, been good citizens. Some of them were even in the military, still got rounded up. Why? Only because they were the other. So Yuri talked about the folks coming to their door, the soldiers, get your stuff, you got so many hours, you can't take this, can't take that. And she looked at her neighbors. She remembered looking at her neighbors, particularly the kids and the parents of the kids, and she said, She said she didn't expect nothing to come from them. I mean, it was like they didn't even know those folks. And so that was affirmation again for me when I read her book some years ago that that could still happen in modern day. It just didn't happen in Germany during World War One and Two, but yeah, that it could still happen. And so that's the thing, that the propaganda now is even more sophisticated. We have AI generated content that sometimes we can't tell if it's real or not. And so we've been bombarded with all of this stuff about the other. And so I would just encourage people to really think about why the other is being presented in such a negative way. And then think about how Black people get presented in a negative way, and how people who have never lived with us, never interacted with us, have a very definitive negative attitude about us. That's some cold stuff, y'all. That is some cold stuff. And that's why I really appreciated when Michael Jordan and Ryan Coogler included in Sinners that couple, that Asian American couple that were merchants. That stuff was real, y'all. So people, sometimes the Japanese people were sent to the South. And so people thought it was curious, like years later, like you would find somebody of Asian descent in the South with a southern accent. It's like, where did they come from? That was part of the internment. Some of them never went back to California, where most of them live. They stayed where they were. They had developed relationships with the community. They had set up shops and businesses. And so that couple that was in Sinners, they had done the research. Another thing what I love about these two brothers. And they had gotten Dolly Lee, who is a documentarian and a historian, to research that part of it. And there were real life Chinese American grocers in Mississippi Delta. And there've been documentaries about this. I saw one called Far East, Deep South, of those relationships, one called Blurring the Color Lines. But there is a history of relationships between Black folks and Asian folks, just like there's a history of us with Native Americans, and history with us with Mexicans. I mean, we have had a relationship with most nationalities that have come to this country, no matter what it is. Now, I'm not saying it's all been perfect. It's complex, because sometimes we are on the other side and sometimes they're on the other side. And when I say other side, I mean with the enemy. So I think for Black people, we just have been in a unique position to interact with so many different folks. And the history shows that for the most part, we took the high road. And so we need to connect with those historic relationships as we move forward to try to create the new world in North America that we are so deserving of. Yeah, so just around immigration, and people were still asking what else can they do. There are some families who are even afraid to go out, and these are people that are not necessarily undocumented, because they know that within a sweep you're going to get swept up. And even though you have papers, they might say, so what? And they have said that to some people. So what? You hollering, I'm a citizen, here's my license, here's my birth certificate. They don't care. They got a quota to meet, y'all. And the quota is 10,000 a day. So you know there's got to be some people in there that don't belong in there. That's a hell of a quota, even for a national quota. But because these concentration camps are run by corporations, and the contract was, you're going to give us this many people so we can make X number of dollars. That's not happening, y'all. And we making sure it doesn't happen, because we've been there. Like, you're not taking this person, you're not getting in this community. And so those numbers have been down, but they are revving up to make sure that they get that 10K a day. And we are revving up to say, no, you aren't. So another thing that, people have been doing in support of the sweeps have been to make sure that those concentration camps don't open in your neighborhood or in your state. And that's been that you all been vigilant about that. And so again, we meeting energy with energy. They're saying, yes, we're going to do this, and we're saying, no, you're not. And so we need to continue to do that. Helping people with shopping. You might say, you might know somebody, or you might be part of, sign up for a group that says, give me your shopping list and your money, and when I go shopping, I'm gonna do your shopping. Folks have been doing that. Now, I'm not quite sure what we're gonna do about the kids that are not gonna go to school, because the ICE people have been hanging out at schools or where children are, because parents are gonna come there to pick their loved ones up. So some kids have been snatched out of school, and so that's not good. That's not healthy. So how do we support that part of the academic part, the educational part of what they're going to be missing? But we need to do that. So there's some groups, and I'm going to try to get those up on my website, who are particularly supportive of immigration and anti-ICE folks, because they're different. Like, you remember Kika said that they do law, so but if it comes to something else, they have to refer them, but they do the legal representation, and that's what her expertise is. But there's a you need to do some wraparound services to make sure that people get what they need in order to live here. And the other thing that we should know is happening, a lot of people are leaving. What the system would say is self-deportation, but nobody's really deporting themselves. And for Haitians, they really don't have anywhere to go. I mean, the US got that place a hot mess. And you heard from Kika that two women who were deported there several days after coming, they were decapitated. That's the level of violence that exists in Haiti right now because of the US. So it's not safe. So when you talking about send Haitians back, yeah, they have a country, unlike a lot of African Americans where we don't know where we came from. They do know where they came from, but they know that that is not a place to live and grow and prosper. It is not. And in fact, it's dangerous. So again, these are foreign policy issues that we've allowed our government to design and to go into other countries causing mischief, and brutality, barbarism, however you want to say it. But colonialism is not just what happened here in this country. That was a global thing. And when I think about the European countries and how they colonized Africa, there you have it. Right there. And I know some of you all had asked about Lumumba Villa. And Villa, which means Lumumba lives, there's a brother during the FIFA World Cup series, particularly when Africa was playing, and particularly when the Congo was playing, you saw a brother with a striking resemblance to Patrice Lumumba standing up with his hand up in statuesque form. First of all, it's very eerie that he looks so much like Patrice Lumumba, but his name is Nkuka Mbuladinga, and he was doing this to raise awareness about what's going on in the Congo, and particularly since he resembles Patrice Lumumba, who was one of the revolutionaries that led that country to its independence from Belgium. Patrice Lumumba, this was in 1960. After the struggle with the Belgians, they said, okay, we're going to give you all independence. And within months, I don't, he didn't even get to be the prime minister or whatever they call their leader for a whole year. Within months, the colonialists have conspired with some of the rebels in the Congo, and they captured Patrice Lumumba. They tortured him. He went before a firing squad. They mutilated his body and then put acid on him. I mean, part of it was so that there would never be a martyr. But if you lived in the Congo and you understood who Patrice Lumumba was, and even those outside of the country, because there were many people who were looking at Patrice Lumumba as not just a revolutionary, but a visionary who understood what he wanted for his country, and he was very much loved by the folks in the Congo. So it wasn't like just because you mutilated his body, his physical being, that he was going to be forgotten. And what was left of his body, unfortunately, and they did not want a physical place like a burial ground where people could come and celebrate him. So his remains were all over the place, but there was a tooth that was left, and a Belgium army officer took that. Isn't this sick, y'all? He took that as a trophy. And in fact, one of the tortured pieces that has been alleged is that they made Patrice Lumumba eat the speech that he had made about independence, which was a very eloquent one, apparently. And they made him eat that before they killed him. So just a few years ago, I mean, in the 1920s, the Belgian officer gave the tooth back. Really, who wants it? Ew. So these people, that was part of the acknowledgement of what had been done to Patrice Lumumba, but also there was an apology. But the apology should be like reparations. That's part of, yeah, I want to talk about reparations. That apology doesn't mean a hill of beans, but one, because that happened in 1960s, there was a wave of other African countries who were fighting for independence from, the colonial oppressors like Britain, Belgium, yeah, all of them. And so they were inspired by what was going on in the US, because the civil rights movement was in the 50s. You had a Black Power movement. They were looking to us for inspiration and guidance. And that's why I have to always remind people that what we do here, people all around the world are watching. And so we want to make sure that we always are siding with the people. We are always siding with the most oppressed. We are always siding on true justice. And so yeah, that was Patrice Lumumba, and Lumumba Via has been there at those games. And the pose that he's taken is coming from a statue in I think the capital city of the Congo, where it's a statue of Patrice Lumumba with his hand up. But sometimes this brother has his mouth and a gun, like a gun up to his head. And that's because they believe in the Congo that a lot of stuff is happening that people don't know about. And so they're trying to raise awareness. So people are asking, like, who's this guy? Why is he doing that? That's the reason why that brother is raising awareness about what has been going on in his country, the Congo, and trying to get people to be aware of that, including the folks right outside of his own country. And one of the interesting quotes that I always, I can't say that I liked it. I think I understand it, particularly given what was going on in the Congo. Patrice Lumumba one time said, and probably many times said, "You will find more traitors than colonizers at the root of Africa's suffering." Think about that. You will find more traitors than colonizers at the root of African suffering. And so what you saw happening after those countries gained independence, the colonizers said, we don't like this newfound independence. And so what they did was put their own people in place. And so those became the neo-colonialists. So they did the same thing the white people did, except they were just looking like the people. And so then they were uprising against that. And so the struggle goes on. But you will find more traitors than colonizers at the root of Africa's suffering. Man, that's something. So that set of players is still in play. That's what NATO looks like. These people still have control over a lot of African resources. They still extracting, they still oppressing, they, all of that is still going on. It's just that it's done now with the permission of the neo-colonialists who are getting fat and filthy rich. So that struggle is going to go on as it has been for a while. I just want to take a minute to talk about the Michael biopic. And I remember when it first came out and people were going, I said, remember, it's a biopic, it's not a documentary, so just go and enjoy and don't try to come back with quoting what happened in that thing. But we now see it is reaching, if it hasn't already reached, $1 billion in gross income. And one of the things that I think gave me pause is that there's a new generation of folks who heard or see Michael Jackson performances, who now got the chance to see somewhat of a likeness of him, a really good likeness of him, to truth be told. But also enough time and information has come out that what Michael endured in the last part of his career and life was being targeted. To dethrone him in many ways. And so we now find out a lot of the folks who were saying there was charges of child abuse, child sex abuse, a lot of those folks got paid to do that. We also find out that Michael was buying up a lot of the music in the industry. He bought up the Beatles, what do they call it, catalog. So he wasn't like the just little person dancing around. He understood the industry. It took him a while, but I think Berry Gordy taught him a lot by the way he exploited him. But yeah, so people have a different kind of appreciation of Michael Jackson this time around, and I guess I'm glad. I'm glad for that his image that was so tarnished at the time that he made his transition is being repaired by new generations of folks who are learning how to appreciate not just his talent, but his business acumen. So yeah. And then we still are learning about his connection with Epstein, because, and I'm going to try to see if I can find out more about this, but there are, I've read some stuff that the reason Michael built Neverland is because he got wind of what was happening with Epstein and the children, and he wanted the children to come to a place where they would be safe and get to be kids. So I'm going to see if I can find out more about that, and maybe share some links with you about that. But I am a Michael Jackson, fan of both him as a person and a performer. And so yeah, I'm glad that the biopic is doing well. I know there was some dissension in the family about Jermaine doing it and his son doing it. But yeah, let the family resolve that if they can amongst themselves. We don't need to be piling on that one. So I want to talk a little bit about these elections coming up, because we have some that are coming up in a couple of weeks. And so next week on the program, we're going to bring some friends in to help us decipher these amendments, these propositions, because some of them confusing. You all are already calling me, talking about like which one is confusing. That's what it's supposed to be. It's supposed to be confusing, so that either you vote wrong or you don't vote at all. And we're going to try to make you be as clear as possible when you vote, but you need to get your plan together. So if you don't have one already, we're going to help you do that next week. Get that plan together, get your sample ballot, know how you're going to vote. And I'm suggesting that you vote early. In St. Louis, you don't have to, it's a no excuse voting. You can vote early. You can go down to the Board of Election Commissioners. But yeah, vote early, because we don't know what might happen on the day of. And I like to do the day of, because I like to kind of see what the flow is that's going. But now it's more difficult to do that because so many people are voting by mail or voting early. But I still just like the experience of going in, talking with people, kind of seeing what's going on and voting that way. But for other people, I think it's, if you can vote early, get it out the way. And sometimes it also helps with a quick voting of the vote count because it's already in there. So all you're doing is kind of taking it through the motions. But yeah, there's some amendments that are confusing. I would say because there are different candidates running in different municipalities and different districts, you're going to have to do your own homework on that one. Or either go to some of these candidate forums so you could hear people's views, so you could know what their track record is. I'm one that doesn't really, I mean, the debates are one thing, you kind of see how savvy people are, but really I'm more interested in what did they do before they decide to run. And what makes them think they should run, or yeah, should run? Because if you don't have a history or love for public service, then I'm gonna have to question whether or not you're just gonna see this as a paycheck or a way to get paid more. And I think we're seeing more of that because now we've allowed the system to be just corrupt as hell. There's so much money in politics now, that people feel like, okay, my vote won't matter because I can't compete with these corporations who now, because of the US Supreme Court ruling, now are considered citizens. So again, y'all, that wasn't Trump that did that. That's been in place for a couple of decades now. So we have watched this stuff like start going down the hill, and we got to stop it. So the elections, August 4th, Tuesday, August 4th, they are going to be in many ways a dry run to the November midterms. So we gotta get fortified for the midterms because the person who is in the White House, the person that's head of the regime, is planning. He's getting desperate, y'all. So desperate people do desperate things, and so he's not just hinting at what he might do, he's telling us what he's going to do, and that includes, taking ballots, particularly from blue states, of if they don't turn over ballots or voter records, he's going to shut them down. Now, we're not in a blue state, but we do have a Democratic in St. Louis, a Democratic governor. So it's probably going to be some conflict there, but we got to be vigilant, y'all, for these elections and make sure that the structure that's in place for people to vote and vote when they're supposed to, early or not, that stays in place. And I know already I've seen the Grill the Glory going on. That's a partnership between the churches and the Urban League. And so people can go to some of those and see if they're talking about candidates and maybe you can get some information. Sometimes people actually know these candidates and can talk about, like, that's, I've known that person for a couple of decades. They go to my church or they're my neighbor. I know what kind of person this is. 'Cause I think right now, y'all, character is so important. Because these people that are running this country now are without character. They really are sociopaths. They are sociopaths. And so this country seems to be doing more, producing more of those kinds of people, and particularly those who want to run for office. So I just think we need to beware and be informed so that we don't participate in voting somebody in of that ilk and then say, well, I didn't know. Because there's many ways to find out. Yeah. So a couple more things that I just want to talk about. There's some things that are going to be coming up. Black August is coming up. And so there's going to be lots of activities there. And I hope we'll still be able to talk about how should people of African descent be observing the 250 anniversary of this country's existence, because it's not been without tragedy and without consequences. And that's how we are here today in 2004 and getting a Trump to lead this country. That was not a fluke, y'all. So again, we got to have some responsibility for that. So I think one of the things that with the Epstein file, we just had those survivors go up on the hill again to ask these crazy people for justice. In my personal opinion, I think we should get ready for the fact that they won't release them. And so what is the plan B for that? The reason I say I don't think they're going to release it because the people who are really looking at the files and seeing who's in there, and seeing what they did when, how they're in those files, believe that it is probably one of the largest trafficking and child sex abuse rings ever, ever. The thing that we are seeing more of is the connection between Epstein and Netanyahu, and the use of this trafficking ring as collecting intelligence on people so that you have them under control later on. This is the fascinating thing about the Epstein files. So I know that the women have been pleading, begging, to get their story told. If they have another way of getting out, I mean, some of them know who their detractors were, who their abusers were. I would say get that on out there if you got the documentation, and let us deal with that. But I just, based on now what we know is in there and who is in there, I mean, you got folks heading up corporations, you had a prince. I mean, this stuff goes to the highest echelons of societies. And it's doubtful if all of that gets released. I just don't think so. And again, because I think that, like, what's the plan B and what's the preparation if they don't do it? Because even if there is a regime change midterm and the Senate and the House, some of those Democrats are in there, y'all. So don't think this is gonna be an easy thing. Some of them in there, okay? So yeah, I just don't think we're gonna ever know about these people unless somebody else inside releases unredacted stuff. Somebody that's working on the inside, because they also, like me, know that it's probably never going to be released as it should. But I am so inspired by the women who were still fighting the good fight, still helping us understand what happened to them. And I'm always telling people, try to remember what they were when they first got introduced to Epstein and his crew of immoral, illegal bandits, snatching kids, and having them being abused, and then recording everything. See, that's the reason that all this stuff was recorded, y'all. This was intel, so that at a later point in time, you blackmail people to keep that stuff from going out. That's why at one point, Epstein, they kept wondering, where is he getting all this money from? He's not really doing anything. He's sitting on his island, sitting on his butt on the island. He was getting millions and millions of dollars from different people that he was blackmailing. So yeah, but these were kids, y'all. They were babies. And some of them are not with us. They commit suicide. They, drug abuse, all kind of stuff based on being these victims. And so I think to the extent that we can support them and continue to try to force Congress to release those files, the files as they were supposed to be released, I think we will have done them a good service too. Again, next week is we're going to try to do our plan for the election. So we got some people coming on to help us with that. So be sure to tune in. And some of, I know, I think the Organization for Black Struggle, we put our voter guide on our website, and I think it's on mine too. So go there. But that's also the place where you can find episodes that you missed in the past. I want to check them out. Those are on there, as well as the writings from the St. Louis American, from blackcommentator.com, and from Cap City Hughes. So all of that is in one place at jamalarogers.com. So check that out. One of the things that we just got a chance to celebrate is the birthday of Assata Shakur. That was July 16th, and I had the opportunity to go to her memorial in New York City. I guess it was last month at Riverside Church. Beautiful. I got a chance to hear and see her daughter, who is in the image of her mama, I must say. It was just a beautiful ceremony. And I had been asked to do some spoken word submitted, and they were going to try to do something with it. And so I didn't quite get the assignment right. I did something later on. So I'm just going to close out today with that spoken word, and also just to really remember what Asada meant to us. And let me see if I can get her. And for those of you all don't know who Asada is, I mean, some of you could tell by her last name that she might have been related to Tupac, but she was much more than that. So we got to know who she is, because she was such an inspiration to all of us. And so let me see if I can do this with only two hands. Sometimes y'all have to laugh at myself, because if y'all can see me doing this, it's hilarious sometimes. Because I want it to do what I want it to do, but it won't do it when I want it to do it. So let's see if we can. Thank you for listening. This is Jamala Rogers, your host of Voices from the Battlefield. I'll see you on the battlefield. We have nothing to lose but our chains. We have nothing to lose but our chains. I wish you could have known her. She was more than a chant. Asada was a multidimensional human, a triple D times three revolutionary. I wish you could have known her. A fascist government tried to kill her, and when the Catholic Church could not mold her, it tried to kill any dimensions it could of a triple D times three revolutionary. I wish you could have known her. Her warm smile and peaceful demeanor, her fiery words and blistering contempt aimed at a system with no right to live. I wish you could have known her. Her indomitable spirit and rebounding body that fist and billy clubs could not break. Asada took a bullet so we could see that she was a triple D times three revolutionary. She was serious about our liberation. The enemy understood that better than us, and made her choose between being a fugitive and a 24/7 mama amongst her people. We didn't get to know her, but we accepted the responsibility of keeping her safe from the U.S. jaws, from bounty hunter claws, greedy for the millions and rewards, and for eternal bragging rights for the capture of a special runaway, but never a slave. Asada was grateful, and we can be proud that we joined hands, global and invisible, and protected her for 46 years. We can get to know her. She left her words of steel for our enemies and a powerful love for us, her people. We must get to know her. Asada, the triple D times three